Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm the resident millennial, I guess they say, Troy McDonald. Thank you for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning here with us on the program. Off the top, I just want to share how devastated I am for all of our community, but especially the Carthage College community that was so closely intertwined with the Summers House. That was a very popular hangout for Carthage students and will be, of course, in the future, but such a traumatic event and life-altering event. And so I wanted to speak to some students for this show and, of course, for our news gathering purposes, but it just didn't work. And I understand that because going through something so traumatic, you know, speaking and telling your story is not the first thing on your mind. So I wanted to give my sincerest condolences to the families of those lost and to everyone who was there and or knew someone who was there, that the trauma that ripples through many different layers that are not often talked about. And so my positive energy and vibes are sent your way. Today's program is going to be centered on really something, an event that I covered last week for WGTD News that was so fascinating and illuminating about the rise in drug use that is occurring in Racine County. And so I wanted to pick some highlights from that presentation and share them here because I think that can be so helpful. Because so many people in these moments turn to, you know, potentially negative vices. And I know for me, it's eating. When I'm sad and I'm down, I will eat like you won't believe. And that's not healthy, right? That's not good. Some people turn to drugs. And one of the fascinating things that came out of this is that drug use has increased during COVID because we're all trying to search to fill voids that were left in us, whether at childhood or through trauma. And it, especially, you can imagine, after a traumatic event like we just witnessed last weekend here in Kenosha. The audio clips that you are about to hear come from an event sponsored by SC Johnson entitled The Opioid Crisis, A Dose of Reality, which served as a kind of a warning signal to the community about the mounting issues that Racine County is facing as they grapple the opioid and other drug, really, crises that are occurring. And I guess one story in particular highlighted this in perfect terms to me, and it was from Patricia Hansen, who is the Racine County District Attorney. One of the most heralded positions in any city is to be a district attorney. It comes with a lot of societal clout. And even in her own family, she was dealing with a relative who was struggling with opioid addiction. And it just proves that anyone at any time can face this issue in their family or themselves. And so I want to start with that. This is Patricia Hansen during that conference sharing a very personal story.
I do want to share with you my own personal experience with addiction. With addiction in my family. So this is a picture of my cousin. This is Nicholas. Nick was your average American kid. He was super involved in sports. He loved football. He was a swimmer. In the summertime, his family would drive out to Burlington, and he was on the water ski team on Browns Lake. This is a middle school photograph of him, and he had every advantage that any kid would want at the age of 12. And we were all a very close-knit, loving, supporting family. Nick is my first cousin, but based on the differences in our age, he was like my nephew. This was a picture of Nick when he graduated high school. Now, we knew that things were not all perfect with Nick once we got to high school. We knew, because he got caught smoking marijuana, that he was dabbling in some drugs. We knew that he was skipping some classes when he shouldn't have been. But he graduated high school. He did the things we expect our kids to do. He went on to start some college. and ended up back in Racine after his education, working in the emergency room at St. Mary's, or now Ascension Hospital. He was a tech in the emergency room department. He met a nice girl there who was a nurse. They got married. They had a baby. And then Nick got into a car accident. He was riding his motorcycle when a student driver came through an intersection and hit him. Being in the hospital, having surgery, repairing his broken bones, caused doctors to prescribe for him various pain medications. Now, at the point in time where Nick got into this accident, the pain medications became so important to him that he would do anything he had to do to get them. And looking back, we now know that his doctor overprescribed these drugs for him because he would lie about his levels, his pain levels. Oh, I'm a 10. Oh, I need more. And ultimately, it led him to a point of addiction on the opiate drugs that he was getting from the pharmacy. In 2012, I had been at the district attorney's office for 18 years, and I had spent the better part of my career prosecuting drug and gun cases. I was there in the 90s when we cracked down on cocaine. I was very familiar with crack cocaine. And come around the middle of 2005, 2006, the Racine DA's office started to see heroin again. And frankly, we were all a little surprised. It had been a drug that we thought had run its course and was not something we had targeted in the past. But Nick became addicted to those pain pills. And despite the fact that he had found his match, he had found his partner, despite the fact that he had a beautiful little baby who looked exactly like him, and despite the fact that he had a loving family to support him, he could no longer get those pain pills from the pharmacy. They cut him off, as they should have. And Nick turned to the street to find the drugs that he needed. In 2012, he finally landed in the Racine County Jail. Nick would steal anything he could get his hands on, whether it was from his family, whether it was from a store. His favorite was stealing DVDs so that he could resell them on the street to buy drugs. In 2012, one of his dealers, Nick had a car because his family had provided that for him. And one of his dealers asked him to drive him to Waukegan to pick up drugs. Nick was wearing a cast from one of the surgeries on his arm, and he hid some of the drugs that the dealer had provided in the cast because he wanted to use them for himself, in addition to what the dealer was going to pay him to drive him back and forth. When the dealer figured out what Nick was up to, they nearly killed him. They beat him, they put him in the trunk of the car, and if it wasn't for the fact that law enforcement happened to be in the area, we don't know what would have happened to him that night. I remember being up on the phone with my uncle for an extended period of time trying to decide, do we pay a ransom? Do we trust that he's telling us the truth? He had lied to us for so long and so many times, we didn't know what to believe. He ended up in intensive care here in Racine and ultimately overcame his injuries from those offenses. But he had been in trouble before that happened, and he ended up in the Racine County Jail. And I have to tell you that it was one of the hardest things I ever did, because I could have gone to the sheriff and said, I need to see my cousin. Can you bring him down for me so that I can talk to him? But I didn't. Because for years we had tried treatment and rehab and tried to find ways to make him better. This is what Nick ended up looking like when he ended up in our jail in 2012. I got him into a program. We thought that would help. He spent about 9 months in the county jail. That time we were still doing an in-house jail program. And he was released from custody. And his probation agent sent him to a transitional living placement so that he would have a place to go, because he couldn't go home. He couldn't go back to his family. He had taken from them. He couldn't be around his daughter because he was dangerous in the situation he had presented for himself. And ultimately, as you'll find with a lot of heroin users, the dose that you used before you got clean isn't the dose you can use when you get out, because it will kill you. Build up a tolerance over time. And so, unfortunately, at that transitional living place where Nick was on Douglas Avenue, he overdosed on heroin that he bought on the street. And his dad, who is a paramedic, was for many years at the city of Racine, arrived at the transitional living in time to see his former colleagues trying to revive his son. And that's an image that we can't get rid of. And so we lost him that day. And it was devastating for us. And I made it my point at that moment in time in my life, that was February of 2013, that I was going to take every opportunity I could to tell this story, to make sure that people understand that even someone like me, who has spent now 26 years learning about these things, trying to help other people, trying to put the bad guys in jail, that you can't prevent it from happening in your own backyard.
We're back on Generation Now. You just heard Patricia Hansen speaking at a conference held last week, sponsored by SC Johnson, sharing her story about a relative in her family struggling with opioid addiction. And she had the prestige. She had everything that you could imagine. Her family had everything, and it still impacted her. And so I think that's a good way to start this program. Up next is Dr. David Galbus Reig. He's the Ascension Medical Director of Addiction Services, and he is blunt. He tells it like it is, and shared one of the most startling facts during his presentation, of which you're going to hear more of. But he said that in 2020, he lost more patients, inpatient and outpatient, that he provides services to. He lost more patients last year than at any time between 2004 and 2019. A 14, 15 year period. Unbelievable. Here is Dr. David Galbus Reig.
So what do you do if you suspect drug use in your child? Talk to your child. Let them know that you're concerned and want to help. And this is true if it's a friend, a family member. It doesn't have to be your child. It can be anyone that you care about. Find out if there's anything else going on. Maybe they're depressed. I've had patients recently, especially this past year. 2020 has been a horrible year because of increases in isolation. People have turned to other things to make themselves feel better. They self-medicate is what I call it. So they've started drinking more, or in some cases they've used substances. And so try to find out what's been going on. Set firm rules and boundaries about what is and is not acceptable behavior, and establish clear and enforceable consequences. So you can't just, you know, one of the important things with addiction is you got to remember, addiction basically produces slavery of the brain. And that's what I tell people. Once someone has addiction, their brain is enslaved by that drug. They will do anything to get that drug, to obtain that drug. And it won't matter what you put in there, unless the consequence of what can happen is worse to them, and it could be almost anything, or is more what I call, what they call in science, salient. It's more relevant to them than the drug use at that time. And depending on the drug, obviously each drug carries a higher risk of severe addiction. Methamphetamine, fentanyl, and opiates in general are pretty tough compared to cannabis as far as what they get out of it. But you've got to make sure that when you say you're going to do something, you do it. The problem with what that I find with a lot of families and the concerns that I hear is that they tell family members, well, if you do this, we're going to take away this, but they never take it away. And so the person learns there's not going to be any consequences, so it doesn't matter. I'll just deal with the yelling and screaming, and I'll go back to doing what I was doing. So without consequences, if there can't be any consequences, just don't say that there's going to be consequences. Don't say anything. Just say, look, this behavior is unacceptable. Next time you do that, if there's nothing you can do, don't say something, because that's worse than saying something and then not carrying it out. Monitor your child's activity. And this is difficult with the age of social media. I don't know how parents do this now. I mean, I know there's a lot of ways to do it on with social media, but it's very, very difficult. Encourage healthy interests or hobbies. And then contact professionals for help. I mean, if you really have a child who's suffering and you really don't know what to do, there's a lot of resources. There's resources in Racine, the crisis hotline. There's resources in Kenosha. There's resources nationally. So even your local provider, your physician, and your physicians can get you in contact with someone that can help too. but make sure you get in touch with someone. So I can tell you that over the past year, particularly since the summer, personally, I've lost more patients to addiction, and they're not just my own outpatients, but patients that I've seen in the hospital to addiction in the past year than I lost between 2004 and 2019. It's been a very difficult year for addiction. It's been a very difficult year for mental health. We're seeing much higher acuity on our behavioral health unit of people that are coming in very, very ill with conditions that for which they haven't taken medications for a while for a number of different reasons. And we're seeing patients using more and more substances and combining more substances together. The final numbers aren't in for 2020. What I've read in literature is it's at least a 40% increase from 2019, 30 to 40% somewhere in there. And the pattern is about the same as 2019, except much more synthetics. Fentanyl is going to be much higher, and I think we're going to see more methamphetamine, at least in Wisconsin. Do I think it's going to continue into 2021? I know, at least in my personal experience on treating patients, the first part of this year has been very difficult already. We're seeing higher levels of poly substance, which we multiple drug use, so people using multiple substances at a time, and overdoses. So I do think the pattern is going to continue. Keep in mind that after an episode of isolation like this, you're going to see a lag of effects because many of these individuals were using in isolation, and you're not going to see the effects many times until family members realize what's been going on. So we're starting to see a significant increase in admissions in 2021.
Wow. I mean, it is incredible. And this can happen to literally anyone who is, I believe, searching for something to fill that void. And in other cases, just looking for help to deal with a physical ailment, right? Might have had an injury of some sort and things just happened, as we heard with Patricia Hansen, the DA. Up next is Tom Cerzniak, who is the Racine County Deputy Medical Examiner. And I'm not even going to waste my time giving an introduction because his is more impactful than any that I can come up with right now. Here is Tom Cerzniak.
I'm the guy you don't see because I show up when you're dead. Drugs kill, I get called. So that in itself is a real scary thing for an average person to have to listen to, but it's a reality. I'm also going to just talk about statistics. People don't like statistics, but these numbers are scary. And they're also very true. They deal with people who have died in Racine County as a result of what we refer to as toxicity between the years of 2018 and 2020. When a person dies, especially if we think it's a drug overdose, and they get sent for an autopsy, or even if they don't, and we have the opportunity, we draw fluids and send them in for toxicity. We're checking to see what is in that person's system, especially if it's going to help us to determine what their cause of death was. So 124 different people died between the years of 2018 and 2020. The big blue section, those are the people that we refer to as accidental deaths, and that is recognized as 85%. The red section, those are people who intentionally committed suicide, or at least to the best of our knowledge, committed suicide. And yet, despite the fact that we do all of these tests and toxicology and et cetera, we also end up with a section like you see there in green of undetermined cause of death. We just can't tell from the information that's available to us. It isn't difficult to see in this little pie that red recognized as female and blue as male, that males far outnumber the deaths from toxicity than females. When it comes to ethnicity, the pie is again, well, it's a little bit more difficult to see. The first little section there are Native Americans. The green section is recognized as being the black African Americans. The purple section is our Hispanic population. And then holding down the big section of the pie are the white people. This is, again, in part because of population as you take a look at it. So it's not unusual that we would have a larger portion of the people who die being white to start with. By age, at the time of their death, probably the easiest thing to show you is at the bottom, that little small section, are the very young. And at the very top, those are the people who are 65 to 84. So by the time we get up to 65, I guess that we've learned not to use drugs as much as the people in the middle section. And 25 to 44, for some reason, those are the people who I would venture to say have in many cases when it comes to drugs believe that they're smarter. And at the same token, because they think they're smarter, they take more chances with the drugs and subsequently die from them. So 85% of the toxicology deaths in Racine County are accidental. People don't take drugs to die. They take drugs to get high. But as we've already heard, there isn't what we call quality control when it comes to drugs. And even though many of the drugs that these people are taking were originally or could have originally been prescribed or are used as medications, the people who are now using them are not saying, well, the doctor told me to take one, so that's what I'm going to do. Instead, the person who has received the prescription may turn around and sell some of that prescription to someone else who, in their particular case, I have not received a prescription for it and therefore are not sure how much they should use, so they experiment. And experimentation in many cases does not work. We already pointed out that 25 to 44 is the age bracket where the deaths occur, and ironically, that's over half of the deaths that we're talking about. So we had 124 deaths in that time span of 218 to 2020, over half of them were in the age bracket of 25 to 44. When you look at the various substances, and there is a variety of substances that the doctor will prescribe that will be considered medications, but they're also opiates, or they're also drugs that can lead to death. Out of those, we now have two that are moving into first and second place. And specifically, as you heard, an officer said, fentanyl, because it's, this is more personal than anything, but because it's a synthetic drug and therefore can be made relatively easy and therefore relatively cheaply, it's finding its way here because buy it cheap, you can make a lot of it, and you can therefore make a profit. Heroin is second, fentanyl is first. And all of the other accidental deaths, when you add the two, well, those two together, you get very close to the 100% of the deaths that are occurring.
I'm the guy, we're back on Generation Now, I'm the guy who you don't see because you're dead. I mean, my goodness, how impactful is that? Goodness gracious. Up next, and to close off the program, is really talking about Narcan and how people can get trained in Racine County. And of course, I encourage you, if you're moved by anything you've heard today and you want to be able to be trained in the deployment of Narcan, if you know someone in your life who may be struggling, find the Kenosha or Walworth County alternative. But in this case, we're going to hear from Carrie Pint, who is the Racine County Behavioral Health Opioid Case Manager. And she talks about how residents in Racine County can become trained in deploying Narcan.
I am representing Behavioral Health Services of Racine County, and there is where we offer substance use and mental health treatment. Today I am talking about the Narcan training, and I want to point out on the flyer that you see on the screen, there is an opioid resources hotline, and the number to call is 262-638-6375. At our clinic, we offer intensive outpatient treatment, individual outpatient treatment, relapse prevention groups, and moral recognition therapy groups. We have therapy available in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening. I encourage any family member or person who is struggling with substance use or mental health to call our hotline. Today I wanted to talk about Narcan training because this is something that we also make widely available at Behavior Health Services. Anybody can be trained in Narcan. Anybody can carry Narcan. It is safe and very easy to use. I am the Narcan trainer, and I will train people individually. I will train businesses and their staff members who are interested in the training and would like to carry Narcan, and also family members. The training with me takes less than 10 minutes in person. As you heard the sheriff say earlier, he could train somebody in 5 minutes how to use it. Anyhow, the Narcan training is available to anybody who would like to. So if you are a family member, if you're a person who struggles with opioid use, if you're a community member or a business owner or just somebody, a citizen that would like to carry Narcan, because the overdoses do happen in public places. They're happening in public parking lots, public restrooms, even in traffic or in somebody's home. And Narcan will reverse the overdose, and you have the opportunity to save somebody's life. Thank you.
Wow, what a show. I get a lot of flack for being whoop-de-de-doo and energy and vibes and all of that, but I truly believe it. If you know someone who is struggling from addiction, or if you yourself are struggling with an addiction to opioids or anything else, really, maybe this is a wake-up call for you. The fact that you turned on this show this morning, maybe this is your moment to go out and change the narrative of your life or a loved one's life. And I know there's a lot of flack within, I know for sure, the millennial generation and Gen Z especially, that we overshare and some other things we don't even talk about. But, like, well, I'm generalizing here, but by and large, I know that's the case with my friend circle. I don't know about yours. But I think it's important that we continue to break the cycle, to break the stigma of what past generations have done and say, no, it's okay that I need help in this situation. And I know personally, I work on that every day. It's not a burden. You are not a burden. It is important that if you need help, that you go out and you get it. Alrighty, until next time. Bye, everybody. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Mike Falkowski, A former KUSD school board member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After